Real life.
Superpowers.
If someone asks you to take the note and you would say, no, why would I take the notes? Then it sounds emotional and it goes again to the place where, oh, she's a girl, she's a woman, she's a whatever. But if you would just say, like, really confident and short, and no, I would rather to not take the notes, then that claims your place. And I'm still struggling with that. I still have the voice issue, the, like, facial mimics, the hands, everything. So it kind of feels sometimes that it comes from more emotional place and not from the brain. But if you master that skill, that's how you get things done.
Welcome to Real Life Superpowers, the podcast where we uncover the mindsets, habits, and strategies of high achievers. Today, we're joined by someone who's not just talking about change, she's making it happen. Yulia Basan is the Managing Director of Women to Women, a powerhouse program dedicated to advancing women in leadership and management roles. Under her leadership, the program has grown into the key force shaping the future of female leadership in Israel, expanding its reach, forging partnerships with industry giants, and creating real impact. She's on a mission to build thriving professional communities for women across industries like finance, tech, and entrepreneurship. From mentorship programs to strategic initiatives, content-driven events, and cross-sector collaborations, Yulia is all about breaking barriers and fostering equal opportunities. In a world where leadership is far from equal, she's not waiting for change, she's driving it. Let's get into it.
Real life.
Superpowers. Superpowers.
Yulia, welcome to Real Life Superpowers.
Hey.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. What are you busy with these days?
Basically kids stuff, you know. But that's for a different podcast, I think. That's for the mommy podcast. But my kids are keeping me busy. So that's it. And not in like good stuff, but in a lot of things to handle. But that's the story of being a mom, I guess. But we are approaching March, which is the busiest month of the year for people in my line of work.
Why?
Why? Because, well, maybe first I'll say what I do. I'm the managing director of the Woman to Woman program. And we basically, throughout the entire year, we work to promote women and help women in all aspects of career and development and managerial skills and leadership skills. And because March, sometime, I think around like maybe 5 years ago, it became the official Women's Month. We used to have a day, now we have a month. So everybody wants to work with us in March. And we are fully booked. So on one side, that's happy.
Yeah, there's 11 months more.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But Yulia, I got to tell you something. Like you were saying, kid stuff is for a different podcast. But I don't think it's coincidental that you open with that. And I think at the end of the day, there's something about, in general, about interviewing career women that will always have that aspect in the background. Or I'm generalizing, of course, there's not always kids in the picture and that's not the direction I'm heading. But I'm saying in general, women have to deal with more stuff typically with their career, whether it's merging career and combining, you know, work and life. And typically is more challenging. And then within being a career woman, it's sort of like you said, like in March, everybody wants to work with you. But there's 11 other months in the year. And I think I think there's something to say about that. Like at the end of the day, it's not the same gender wise.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah.
I know so. it's, you know, if I'll take it to biblical times, right? So in the Bible, there is in Hebrew, the women are be'etzev teldi banim. So you will be responsible for carrying and giving birth. And the man will be be'ze'at apecha tochal lechem. The man will be responsible for the work, right? It's in the Bible. But we're not in the Bible anymore. And those roles have became really the border, there's no border anymore, but men cannot have children, whereas women are still having the children and taking, maybe given, I don't know which word we want to use, but generally speaking, feel more accountable for that area. But still, we want to work. We want to have a career. We want to develop ourselves. And there's a lot of choices we need to make along the way. And I think that the fact that we have the choice, that's the good scenario. Sometimes we come to a crossroad where we can't choose because external forces make us choose. So, for example, 2 years ago, I decided to leave my very, very comfort and well-paying job in Johnson & Johnson, which is huge American corporate. And I was on the path to hire a senior leadership, but I decided to leave because I wanted to take a more mellow role and focus on my kids, my family, my well-being, my life, the other part of my life. But when we look, let's say a year ago, when the war started in Israel, and a lot of women couldn't make that choice anymore because their husbands are in the army, because there's a lot of going on. Some of them have to move. Some of them have to change their entire life. So it's not a matter of a choice anymore. It's forced. And I think that's the story. That's the entire story. We can finish here. We won't, but we can, because the story is that when we get to choose, we can choose if we want to focus on career, on family, on whatever. But when a choice is taken, it mainly affects women.
I think the fact that Renan was surprised, to me, it's not surprising. And I'll share this with you. Like, working with Renan, I know that he's completely blind to this and it's diverse around him. And then also thinking about myself, like, I grew up in a house where it was always trivial that I can do anything. I was like the only girl in the boys' basketball team, and I was always playing also with boys. And it never really occurred to me that that's an issue. And I'll also say, which is pretty optimistic, that throughout my career, I never felt like less. And then suddenly, I'll tell you two things. A, I became a mom to a girl. And then I started, you know, being more sensitive to this in the sense of, wait, am I paving my own bubble? And I should be more aware of what's going on in general. And then another thing, and I told you this before, let's take our podcast as an example. And Renan, get this also. Like, a while ago, my mom told me, "Nah, how diverse is your podcast?" And that hit me in the gut because she was so right. And you know what the reason is that we don't have as many girls or women? It's because we typically work through PR at this stage of our evolution, because we've been around for a few years now. We get inbound pitches and we get to choose. And the amount of women that we get pitched is almost zero. So that's just the reality check that we got. And it signaled something to me. And of course, at first I was resistant. And then after I let that sink, I realized I have to do something about that. And that's how we ended up also talking. And then you started connecting me with other women. And I'm happy to actively make that change. But I'm sharing all of this to say there is a reality that whether we like to admit or not is ongoing.
Yeah, that's true. And the optimistic side of it is once you put that gender glasses on, you cannot unsee it, right? So once your mom pointed out to you that you don't have a diverse guest list in terms of gender, right? It can be anything. It can be whatever. But she pointed out in a gender issue. So once she pointed that out to you in terms of your podcast, you will definitely start seeing that everywhere. And that's the first step towards change, right? Because now you see it. You don't only see it in where you can make the difference. And now Ronan will see it also. So next time he goes to, he gets an invite to a meetup and he sees that the panel is 5 men and 1 woman, he will say, wait, do I want to be a part of that? Do I want to be in the audience where there's no female representation on stage?
Oh, by the way, that was not the. I do agree with you that there is a presentation of entrepreneurs and executives that are more on the male scale. That's for sure. My question was more on the responsibility as a on the children. So, in my perspective, I'm saying that's the part where I see a difference. I don't think there's more responsibility in the Bible for the kids. In my position, by the way, I'm saying this. I'm a lot more involved in my kids' life than my co-parent. So so like that was on that side, on the executive side, and entrepreneur for sure. Just to give reference, my dad does research on global entrepreneurs. Significantly, entrepreneurs, there's 76% men over 24% women for many reasons. I just don't think they all have to do with motherhood or the responsibility to take it home.
I agree, but let's take that. Let's stay on the motherhood example, right? So, Noah, I'll ask you a question. When you go out at night, whatever, whether it's a social event, it's a business event, whatever, do you get asked who's with your kids? Who's watching the kids? So who's staying home with the kids if you're here? Did anyone ever ask you that?
Of course.
Wonen, did anyone ask you that?
Every time.
Really?
Yeah, every time.
He doesn't represent the average.
I'm probably not apparently not a representation.
Okay, let's do it again, and then you'll say, no one asked me that.
Yeah, no, so I'm 50% co-parenting alone. So yeah, so definitely I've been told that, and I'm very involved. So, but it's not, that again, we're talking about statistics. So probably statistically, you're probably correct 100%. So we're not talking about me personally. Let's take me out of the equation.
And I do want to say my husband is, and I don't have any issue with the word husband or whatever, but husband, partner, whatever you want to, whenever term you want to use.
No, but come on. In Hebrew, that's ownership. It's not the same in English.
Right.
I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with husband, but I will never say husband in Hebrew.
Yeah, I do. I just say it. I will never say girl in Hebrew. Banot or, I don't know. I would never say that. I think banot is like up until you're 16, a girl. So my husband is very much involved, but still, you know, when we need to like divide the days, I'm the one responsible for the calendar. I'm the one who's sending out the invites. I'm the one who's doing the logistics, the back office of the house. So I'm the back office and the CEO of the house.
Right. But saying that, I'm saying, do you think that's the reason, the significant reason why there's less representation? Do you think it's like that? Because I'll tell you, when you say the war, so let's go for that. So historically, you're correct. In World War II, one of the problems where all the men were shipped over to Europe, and then actually gave the women a opportunity, okay, to go and get jobs where beforehand they were very male oriented, and that actually gave them a lot of power and control. And also gave them opportunity. So they still were mothers. So my point taken is I'm not belittling the job of a mother. I think it's the most important job there is. I grew up with one. I needed her. So it's not that. But I do think that the reason that there's not entrepreneurs or is not the, and I'm using a hard word, so I apologize, but it's not the excuse of being a mother, but it's actually the maybe favoritism or maybe the historical idea or maybe the bravery, okay? Meaning there's a fear factor. So one of the researches that I said my dad said also was a very big fear factor for historical reasons. Like to understand some of the psychology of people is when I grew up and I see my dad as a soccer player or a football player, and our listeners are American or European, then they become a soccer player because that's what they know. And if, they're lawyers, you become a lawyer. And if your dad goes and does an entrepreneurship or is an executive, then you have more bravery to do that. And it's something that historically, okay, in an evolution, it will pan out the fear factor, right? And I think the best thing is just, getting people empowered to do so. I don't think the having, like, I actually think it's evening out, and I'm not the only unique one, in a sense that it's slowly leveling that co-parenting, like you expect the male and female to do the same job.
But you are talking about the execution. And I will agree with you on that part, right? I pick up my kids 3 times a week. My husband picks them up 3 times a week. He takes them to soccer, to basketball, whatever. And so the execution, let's say it's 50-50, right?
Right.
The responsibility. Well, I asked my husband to take care of a health issue one of my kids has. So, and he said, no problem, I'll take care of it. Can you make a list of what I need to do? Can you make a list that I need to send this to this doctor and go to buy? Just make the list. And that's the mental load. And the mental load is not evenly distributed, right? So adding to the execution, let's now talk about the planning. The planning part is not even. And that's something that we can, like, I sit on the train and I will never just look out the window, right? I'll do the shopping. I'll text the teacher. I don't have a downtime at all. And again, it's not only women, right? We live in a time where it's so hectic and it's so busy and we want to do everything and we want to be everywhere. I agree. But the responsibility that we take upon ourselves, and maybe sometimes they're given to us, not directly, but given to us by whatever society, our close family, or it's a heavy load to carry.
Right.
What kind of a house did you grow up in?
Well, I grew up with, we came from the Soviet Union in 1991. And it was just after the Soviet Union collapsed. So I was a citizen of a country that does not exist anymore. I don't have another citizenship. I don't have another passport. That's it. I'm a citizen of Israel. And I came here with just my mom. I was 6 and my mom was 25. She gave birth when she was, well, for now it sounds very young, but back in those days in Soviet Union, it was, yeah. So she was 19 when I was born and I came here with her.
With her only?
I came with my grandparents, but they left to Canada a few years later. So the majority of my childhood, it was just me and her. And the only concern and the only issue and the only thing that was like the only environment in the house was the financial one. The only, because it was truly a surviving issue. It's a matter of life and death, not as an expression, but it was just that, because my mom needed to work. She did not know Hebrew. The first job she got was being a waitress in a coffee house. And that's what she did, like from the morning to night. When my grandparents left Israel, I was 10 years old. It was 4 years later. I was 10 years old. And from the age of 10, there was no one to welcome me home when I come home from school. There was no one to help me with my homework, not just the physical absence, but my mom did not know Hebrew, or when she did know Hebrew, she was not in a position to understand or to help me with school, with homework, with exams. So it was pretty in the family term. I was pretty self-raised, and I don't say it because I hold a grudge or because I'm mad or anything. No, I completely understand that that was the situation, and there was nothing she could have done differently or better. She gave like 150%, and so that was my childhood. And I grew up in Hod HaSharon, which is, I don't know if you know this, but in Hod HaSharon, there is not a lot of Olim Chadashim or people that are immigrants. So in my school, we were 3. So first day of first grade, I come and I don't know a word in Hebrew. And that's it. And there you go. Go ahead. Now you're in first grade and you have to learn everything. And just a funny story, the first word I knew was carrot, which is pretty weird, right? It's a weird word to know, but it was the first word I knew because we studied like something in Hebrew, and that I will never forget that. It was 35 years ago. And that was the first word I learned in Hebrew. It was not mom or dad or anything. It was carrot. So Hodesh Ohan is a pretty, like in terms of socioeconomic situation, it's a pretty well city. Yeah. So it's really surreal being an immigrant in a city like that. Cause there's a big difference between you and the other kids. And also there's a big difference between how you perceive and your actual situation. Because obviously, if you grew up in a city like that, you have money and you've traveled and you have good education. But I had none of those. So it was complicated.
But I guess in a sense, it always is with everybody's own context. And you're sort of walking proof that at the end of the day, you're able to rise above those challenges. Did your mom, despite being away a lot and being, you know, with having to deal with circumstances and all the stress that came along with finances, was she also very empowering? Did you grow up very self-confident, or is that something that you found in yourself later on?
I think that because there was so much financial concern, there was no time or place for any other concerns. So if I had to do something and money was not an issue for that something, then there's no problem. Go ahead, do it. You can do it. You can definitely, because there's only one concern. There's only one thing we need to consider. So I never thought there's like, if this is something I can do without having a financial issue, I can definitely do it. No problem.
That's amazing though. Because that means you're limitless. The only limit is external.
Well, I think that there's a lot of, you know, there's something that you're born with, right? And I feel that I was born with a passion for achieving goals, right? That's the only thing I care about. I decide what is my goal, and I only look at the goal. I don't look right, left. I only look at the goal, and I will do anything to achieve that goal. What's the problem? Once I achieve it, I'm happy for like a millisecond. And then I ask myself, okay, what's next? I want to be there. I want to do the next thing. So I think everyone are born with that something, a special something that's like the fire. And that's mine.
So what was the fire growing up?
I think I didn't want to add any concern to my mom. So I was, the most important thing to me was to be a good girl, right? And what does a good girl does? She gets good grades. She gets a good unit to serve in the army. She goes to a good university. That's the only thing I cared about. And by the way, I did not have to be, in my mind, I did not have to be perfect, right? If I want to go to the Israeli Institute of Technology, that's the best institute the way I see it. If I need a 65 to get in, I will get a 65. I don't need to get 100. I don't care. Because the goal is not to be perfect. The goal is to get what I want. So I was never like a hundred. My report card was not all hundreds, or I never excelled in anything, but I always got what I set my mind to. And I think that's the difference, because the aim or the goal to be perfect, sometimes it derails you from getting what you really want.
Nice.
And like, do you remember when you first felt that perhaps being a girl, or it was later on, then being a woman can be something that has to be like a challenge, a barrier between what you want to achieve and where you are?
Only when I look back. Right. Only when I look back on my career, on my school, on where I went to the army, only when I look back and I remember stories or okay, events that happened. Only now I can say, oh, that happened just because I'm a woman. But growing up and like building my career and moving up the corporate ladder, I never saw that as an obstacle. Never. I remember that when I was on my second maternity leave, I was doing interviews on Zoom for a remote position that had like 50% travel. Because no problem. That's what I want to do. I'll do it and we'll make it work. But looking back today, I remember like things where I walked into a meeting room and someone asked me to like, you know, take the notes of the meeting. Oh, can you go grab the coffee? Like things like that. I was just like strong, maybe confident enough to not give a, I don't know.
It's okay. We can curse here. So what advice would you give women who end up in such room and are asked to take the notes? Because it's a tricky situation.
It's a very tricky situation.
Because it's so natural, right? It's like, there's subtext, but it's not direct.
I think that my problem is that, you know, even if you listen to me now, I kind of sing, right? My voice goes up and down and I'm like all over the place. And it sometimes sounds very emotional. Whereas if I would just speak in a really like confident voice, one level, not go up and down, then you can pretty much say anything, right? So if someone asks you to take the note and you would say, no, why would I take the notes? Then it sounds emotional and it goes again to the place where, oh, she's a girl, she's a woman, she's a whatever. But if you would just say like really confident and short and no, I would rather to not take the notes, then that claims your place. And I'm still struggling with that. I still have the voice issue, the like facial mimics, the hands, everything. So it kind of feels sometimes that it comes from more emotional place and not from the brain. But if you master that skill, that's how you get things done.
Like assertiveness is something actually, maybe you've read Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, of the CEO of Facebook. Yeah. She talks about that concept of how if you're able to be assertive, even if you're faking it, it makes a large difference.
Yeah. And I think that the way you be like the behavior in terms of voice, volume, hand gesture, face mimics, it has we don't want to admit it, but it has a role in it. It's not just how professional you are. It's also how you deliver your message.
But that's human nature, regardless of gender, of course. It's just a matter of the subtext of your body language, of what you're sending off.
Yeah, but when a woman does it, it can really fast and easy take you to the place where she's a woman. She's pregnant, it's hormones, it's whatever. It can really, really fast goes there.
We're excited to be collaborating with the Israeli website CTech, owned by Kalkalist, Israel's leading business newspaper. CTech is the gateway of the Israeli high-tech to the tech world and vice versa. If you're not already a regular reader, we strongly recommend that you check out kalkalistech.com, kalkalistech.com, to stay up to date on all high-impact stories from the Israeli tech scene.
Yuli, I have a question for you. So, like, what is success for you when you work with... the women, like what is the KPI that you achieve?
It's a very good question. So first, maybe I'll say what we do in Woman to Woman, right?
Sure.
So our strongest capability is creating mentoring programs. So we take women that are mid-level management, or not necessarily management, but like mid-level in position, even if they're individual contributors, and we connect them with high professionals in the Israeli ecosystem. So and they work one-on-one with each other. And the other aspect of that is group meetings. So once a month or once in 2 weeks, they meet and they get a lecture or something that has to do with managerial skills or leadership skills. And that's how our program is built. So we did it for the high-tech industry, and we're doing it for a finance women. It's really, there's not one specific area. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I ask myself, really, are you really making an impact? Because what are you doing? Are you like, you're calling someone to come and give the lecture, or you're like ordering the snacks? Really? What, like, come on. And every time I think that, I get a text message. Like, I don't know, something cosmic.
Okay, and what's the text message?
And every time it's a text message from one of our mentees or one of our mentors or some woman that I worked with or someone I met in a meetup, and she is saying how an occasional meeting got her that job, or how her mentor helped her, or how a different mentee gave her the courage to leave her job and to apply to another job. And that is where I feel I'm making an impact. So a KPI, a measurable KPI, that's a hard question. But an emotional KPI, that's every time. Every time someone gets promoted, every time someone gets a raise, every time someone gets the courage to take a difficult decision to create her path, for me, that's a success. But because I work for an American corporate, let's talk about measurable KPIs, okay?
Right.
So last year we had a program that was the first and the second cycle of that program were last year. It's the program is called Reisherr. And that program is dedicated for women in junior leadership roles. So team leads, women that's their first managerial role. And the KPI for that program was that in a year of finishing the program, 90% of the participant will either get a raise, a promotion, or a bigger team to manage. Do you know what the actual number was?
What was it?
100%.
Really?
Every participant in the first cycle of the Reisherr program either got a promotion, either switched a job and got a raise or a promotion, or got a bigger team to manage.
Wait. So, Julia, what then is that voice downplaying this to ordering a snack or booking a talk? I don't understand.
You have no idea how good the snack is. It's all in the snacks.
It's all in the snacks. And, you know, we all have our insecurities, right? And I'm just confident enough to talk about them. But it's okay. Sometimes I ask myself, really? And then I say, yes, really. Because I look at the numbers, I look at the text message, I look at the women that I meet, and they are all grateful. They're all feeling a part of a bigger community. They are all feeling that the woman to woman is, it's not just a phrase. There is actually a woman that will help you. And there is actually someone that will walk hand in hand with you and create your path to success, whatever you want it to be. Even if, you know, sometimes you have to make hard decisions. Sometimes you decide to close a startup. But it's not happy, right? It's not like you're not all lovey-dovey when you close a startup and go work in an office job. But there's someone there with you. It's either your mentor, it's either someone from your community, from the woman-to-woman community, from the alumni community. You are never alone. They're always there.
Gotcha.
What led you to this path? What's the motivation?
So as I said, I was in a corporate job. I was there for 11 years. I was really on the path, right? I don't think it was a secret. Everyone knew that I'm going to like take higher positions in the Israeli sites. And during that time, the war between, I was on my second maternity leave, and the war between Russia and Ukraine broke. And I was like walking outside with my stroller and with my baby, and she's a girl. My older is a boy and the youngest is a girl. So I was walking with her and I was listening to a lot of podcasts, and I was hearing that a lot of people just, you know, stop their lives and go help people that they've never met in different countries, and they're willing to do anything to make this world a better place. Not as a saying, but as an actual doing. And I think that that's where I started to ask myself, what are you doing? Like, do you want to be a part of what you're doing, or do you want to maybe do something different? And by the way, I was in the pharma industry, right? I was making drugs that were saving people's lives. But when you go up that ladder, you kind of forget about that, right? Because you're busy with KPIs and with budget planning and with your employees and everything. You're not feeling that. You're not meeting the people. You're not talking to them. You're not getting the text. And that's the point where I stopped and I said, okay, I want to do something different. And I think that the most important thing that I want to say about this, because I work in a nonprofit organization, right? In Woman to Woman is a nonprofit organization, but I work there. I'm not a volunteer. I get paid. And it's really important for me to say that, because I want that women that are coming and joining Woman to Woman, I want them to know that I work for them. It's not a hobby. It's not something that I do when I have the time. I do that every day, every single day. I work for them to help them. And that's where I knew that I want to work in something like that. And then I had a medical issue. And I found myself during that medical issue, I found myself just thinking about how am I making my sick leave longer, or how am I not getting back to work? So I think those two things, I was kind of tired of that. I wanted to do something better. And then I just, you know, things just happened. I got the newsletter for the A200 Alumni Association, where Woman to Woman is a part of. And it had like a text saying, we're looking for the Woman to Woman managing director, and these are the skills that we need. And I looked at it and I thought, okay, so I know English, I'm presentable, I'll go for it.
Isn't that amazing? Wait, so let's talk about the 8200 is a military unit, right?
Right.
A military unit has a women nonprofit organization empowerment plan. Okay.
And so much more. So the A200 Alumni Association is an organization that is working for Israeli society. There's no better word. We have accelerators. We have programs for small businesses. We have program for women. We have program for students that are coming from a difficult background, right? So, and everyone can be a part of it. And doesn't matter if you served in the army or if you served in the unit, everyone can be a part of it. And this is a nonprofit organization. So every shekel we get in donation goes back to the community, and you choose which community you want to support. So if you want to support the Israeli entrepreneur scene, then you will give a donation to the accelerators. If you want to support women in Israel, you will give your donation to Woman to Woman.
Right. That's incredible though, right? It's like the military, right? That's like the last place you would think that, that there would be such a program.
Absolutely. Because, and when you hear A200 Alumni Association and you hear that we are a nonprofit, the first thing I get asked is, so where do you work? You volunteer there, right? Where do you work? And then I say that that's my full-time job. And then the second thing that people ask me is, why do you need a nonprofit organization? You don't need help. You already. And I say, right, we help everyone, like whoever wants to be a part of our programs, welcome.
So, and you saw, you know, that you saw that the requirements are English and being presentable, and then how did this play out?
No, there were like tons of requirements, right? These are the only two I met. I'm not even sure that the presentable was there. Maybe it was something that I like made up, but I've never raised money, right? I don't know how to do it. I've never worked with startups. I've never done any of those things. But, and this is circling back to the fact that I only see goals. I only see the target. I wanted that job and I didn't.
Why? What happened that moment? What clicked for you? What made your heart sing?
I saw that this is a nonprofit organization, which I really wanted to work for. I saw that it's working with women. And I saw that it's part of a unit that I served in. So I thought it would be a great opportunity. I had no idea. I had no other details but those details. I thought it might work.
And you didn't meet most of the requirements?
I think only the English requirement.
Wow. So how did you make it happen?
So I gotta be honest with you. When I went on the first interview, it was a Zoom interview, and we finished. And the woman that was interviewing me, she asked if I wanted to add anything else. And I said, yes, you know, Michal, maybe you didn't like me. Maybe you don't think I'm a good fit. And maybe I'm not a good fit, but I can guarantee that there is no other candidate that wants this job as much as me. So even if you don't like me, give me another chance. Give someone else the opportunity to like me. Like, pass me on to the next interview. And I don't know if she liked me or not, but she passed me on to the next interview. And there were like a bunch of them. But that first one, I feel that it was like the most crucial one. Because I was not the perfect fit. On paper, right? On paper, I was not the perfect fit. But I knew that there is no other candidate that has the same fire that I have.
How do you know such a thing? How can you know that?
Because I know myself.
Yeah, that's the only one you know for sure.
That's good point, though.
Yeah, but I knew that I wanted it so bad that you have to you have to step up a lot to get to my level.
That's really interesting because that takes so much confidence because you're saying it. And you're also saying, I don't even meet the requirements, but you will not find anybody as motivated as me to do this. So give me a chance.
And I think that motivation can a lot of times compensate on other skills, a lot of other skills. And that was my way of thinking when I was a manager, like hiring people. Motivation is one of the like the top three in my mind.
So I'll ask a twofold question. When you try to interview, not try, when you interview people, how do you really uncover motivation? Because, you know, people on an interview, they will play out, they will say they're motivated. So what are the indications that it's genuine? And then on the other end, how can women who are, you know what, I'll not make this a gender thing. How can people who are super motivated achieve their goals, even if they don't meet the requirements, if you have tips on that end?
So I think that's an answer to both questions, right? I think the most important thing is to speak up. First, there's the American way of seeing motivation. You can ask during an interview. So do you have any questions for me? And if the candidate doesn't have any question, that kind of says it all. Like, you didn't do the research, you know. So, but that's more of a playbook.
Right. And by the way, people who read the playbook will ask the questions. We're still on the acting.
But I think that speaking up and saying and really verbalizing that we as people, we have a gut feeling, right? We can And we rely on that gut feeling. It's not that only we have it. We work with it. So I think that speaking up in an interview, in a whatever, speaking up, saying how much you want it, it's not embarrassing. It's not pathetic. It's on the other, like On the contrary, it's enthusiastic. I want to work with enthusiastic people. I want those people to say, I will do anything to get in the program. I had a candidate in one of the programs, and she applied for the program, and then she sent two friends to talk to me, right? And she was accepted. And then she said, you know, I asked one of my friends to talk to you and she didn't answer. So I asked another, and then eventually they both talked to you. And I thought that it might like look pathetic or desperate. And I said, no, I love it. I love it that you were confident enough that you used every skill that you had. You used every tool that you had to get what you want. So I'm not saying don't break any rules, don't do anything illegal, but use your skill set or use whatever you can to get things done, right?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think also maybe I'll add to both of my questions that if people are able to verbalize and convey what actually they're passionate about with respect to the opportunity, you know, what is making them feel they want this, then I think that can really, you know, from an interview point of view, if you ask somebody, why are you passionate about this? You will get the answer.
Right. Because someone who's looking, let's go to the job seeking example. Someone that's looking for a job or just, you feel there, he's not going to have a good answer. And in terms of why do you want this? Why are you passionate about it? But someone who really wants this because 1, 2, 3, and she knows how to break it down for you, that's a whole different story.
It's making me remember a long while back, Renan and I spoke with Derek Gaunt. He's a partner in the Black Swan
Black
Group.
Swan.
Yeah. His boss is the famous of the two because he's Chris Voss, who wrote Never Split the Difference. So these are highly experienced FBI negotiators. And he told us something that stuck with me, that if you ask someone to describe to you how they see something play out in their head, they're going to walk you through it. So sometimes just asking, how do you envision this? You uncover a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. So why do you want this job? How do you envision you doing your job?
Yeah, and then you can see a glimpse into the future.
Right, absolutely.
Fascinating. And then, so how long have you been there?
So I've been here for 2 years and a month, actually. And it's been a roller coaster because, you know, there's a lot of going on in Israel in the past 2 years. We started with the government issues and there was a lot. And then when you thought that this could not get any worse, October 7th happened and the war broke. And I froze, really. I did not know what to do. And then again, that self-doubt came up and I said, there's a war going on. Are you really going to talk about how to look for a job or how to become a better leader? Really? You're not going to do that. So we decided, I decided to think about what's right for our community, what's right for our alumni group. And it took us like 2 weeks to recover. And we started doing Zoom sessions. We started talking about social media. We started talking about mindfulness. We started talking about things that are not necessarily career related. But in that time, there was nothing more important. We talked about being a parent during the war or the beginning of the war. And we did yoga together in a Zoom session. And I thought that life will never be the same, really. I had no idea how do you get back on track. And I think that our first physical meetup was in December.
2 months in.
Yeah. And the feedback was amazing. We had like 100 women coming and everyone were saying, I don't care what this lecture is about. I don't care what this meetup is about. I don't care about anything. I just want to, I want to get a break. I want to get a break from being at home with everyone. I want to get a break from watching the news. I want to like just for a second or for 3 hours to feel normal again. I used to go to meetups all the time. I used to, and I haven't done that. And I need this for my well-being. And I think that at that point, I kind of said, okay, I have to get back to business. We have to start the programs. We have to go back to working, because even if the topic is women leadership, it's just a break. It's just a break from everything that's going on. And we, in January, we started the first cycle of the Rise Her program. And we had, I don't know, I think around 250 applications. It was crazy, because you thought, like, who has the mental time or space for that? And it was amazing. And we had participants from, you know, across the board. We had participants that are that live in a geographical far areas, and we had women over 45, and we had Orthodox religious women, and we had Arab women in the same program. So it was a microcosmos of the Israeli society. There were 20 women, really from all over the place, and they only wanted to meet, to speak, to feel normal again. So that was amazing.
I think it's a process that we all went through of sort of understanding how we stand up from all this gravel and you know, dust off what we can, and realize that we have no choice but to continue working and doing, and that even the opposite just means we've lost in our spirits. So I think it was a process, an evolution that I think it's an ongoing one, because let's face it, we're still in this ongoing reality. But I think we all had to go through some processing and sort of understand how do we in a life that is never going to be the same. I think that's true. I do. So I think it, picking ourselves up within that premise and doing the best that we can, I think is a process that was across the board. And I think we've also discovered, and I think you really sensed it, you know, on steroids, quote unquote, the power of community within.
Absolutely. I had one of our community members, she's from Sderot, that was the city that was heavily attacked, and she didn't have clothes, right? She left, she ran, she moved to her parents, and we had other women just bringing her clothes, not in terms of donation. It's not even like a donation thing. It's just, I'll come to you, we'll sit, we'll speak, we'll have a coffee, I'll give you, like, you will just feel normal again for a second. So the power, a community is so important. And you know, we're kind of like evolving from those statements or dark eras where like women didn't like each other and they didn't get along, and like communities of women, it's never a good thing. No, we're not there. We're in a new place. Women are, it's not only the power of community, it's the power of sisterhood. And we really see it. No.
Exactly. Now, and I'll just throw out an idea that I had in my head. And Renan will vouch for me that I'm in no way, you know, I'm not the one who will say like women are better, or like I'm almost blind to this. But I think in a sense, that whole premise of women together are poisonous is a sort of divide and conquer, premise that was somehow injected, not by women. I mean, that's food for thought. And I think we're discovering it, as we become stronger, as individuals, I think we discover that stronger women together is actually powerful. Why are you laughing, Renee?
Because it's implemented in Hollywood society, you know, like Jolene, you know what I mean? Like, it has nothing to do with, I have to say, as men, I'm telling you, also men are ridiculously poisonous. with one another 2 minutes long. So at the end of the day, it's funny for me because it's just, it's a very 1950s kind of implementation of things. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, Mad Men, Madison Avenue.
But I think, I think that the moral should be that I can be strong and you can be strong too. And it doesn't matter, like, if it doesn't matter if I'm a woman, you're a man, you're a woman, it doesn't matter. We can both be at the same level. It doesn't affect.
I agree, but I perceive it differently, actually, how Noah does. I'll explain what I mean. I see that as someone who's saying, I'm scared because it's a threat. The reason I say that, because think about what they say about, let's say, immigrants that come to a country together and they live in the same space, right? Then they say, wow, it's really poisonous because they live in the same space. It's always from a different perspective of fear. Right. It has nothing, you know what I mean?
Wow, I'm with you, Anand. I think also you probably sensed it because I'm sure people were rolling their eyes at you for speaking Russian. Like, people are so allergic to anything that's different to them. And yeah, I think it's rooted in fear, exactly like Ronan does. I think if we're able to rise above that, then we're all better people. And if we're able to see the good in people, if we're able to let people feel good about themselves without thinking that they're arrogant and you know, put the lens of appreciating a person and understanding they're also giving you permission to be great, I think that's a much healthier mindset.
Absolutely. I completely agree with both of you.
Yulia, what's your superpower?
That's a good question. I think that my superpower is to always look forward. Like, I don't, if that's a weakness as well, right? Because when I fail, I move on really fast. Like, I'm looking forward. I failed. Okay, next. Why is it a weakness? Because when I succeed, I forget about it really fast. Like, I'm always looking, what's my next thing? What's my next goal? I can be in a hotel in Cyprus booking my next vacation, right? Because I'm always like thinking about my next thing. So that's my superpower and my weakness as well.
Yeah. Okay. So that cancels the next question.
We have a secret. We have a secret that you actually found out a secret. We found out that all superpowers are also weaknesses.
Oh, really?
So you're on to us. That's it.
Yulia, lots of luck with your mission.
Thank you.
And thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That's all for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider subscribing to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Also, if you have a moment, we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review our podcast on the platform you're listening to. This will help others find our show. And as always, if you know anyone who you think would enjoy our podcast, please share it with them. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back as usual on the 1st of the month.
Real. Live.
Superpowers.
Up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology.
It's alive!
Real. Live.
Superpowers.